I was waiting for, like, recording on the correct microphone or some other smart-ass commentary.
No, I'm not doing that. No. No,
you're not recording on the right microphone, or you're not going to tell me you're recording.
I am recording on the right microphone, but I think that you trust me enough to know that now I'm recording on the right microphone.
I made you say it twice now, so obviously there's some distinction here. Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is September 20th, 2018. That is very late in the year. And this is episode 590. I am joined today by Mr. Greg Lee.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone. I believe this is like the 150th episode since you took over as host.
Oh.
That was 440.
Wow, that's actually kind of scary to think about.
Yeah, that roughly, you know, it's more than 3 years, but, you know, it's kind of...
feels like a 50. Decade.
Roughly 50 episodes a year numbered is what we get for.
Also joined today by Mr. John Lindemann.
I want you to know, James, that the next time I host this podcast, it will be called Radio Fire Nintendo, not Radio Free Nintendo.
Okay. And Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
To celebrate your 150th episode as a host, we brought everyone who knew you in high school on the call.
So no one is on the call. That's good. This is Radio Free Nintendo, a competent podcast made by professionals as provided to us by Simtendo. If you missed that, I have asked people to submit to us catchphrases for the show. We try out new ones. Most of them are just variations on apologies for the show, which fair, but hurtful.
If it's that bad, don't listen to it. And certainly don't waste your time fucking suggesting things to it.
This hurts us. Look, we can say we're bad, but you need to at least pretend we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Look, like and subscribe, people. Review us on iTunes. Fuck it.
We have closed the comments for this podcast.
This episode? I don't even know if you can close the comments. Actually, I can just break the comments throughout NWR. That's one way of closing them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, so besides effing up our own website, new business. Everybody this week has new games for Switch. Well, new to us, at least, for Switch. All of these games, however, have been in other places. It's kind of a freaky theme that we've put together, but that's okay. We're going to get started on it with me. I had a review. I hinted at it last week, but I have a review that has just gone live at NintendoWorldReport.com, a website for Nintendo coverage. The world's only website for Nintendo coverage. World's greatest website for Nintendo coverage. The world's white and bluest website for Nintendo coverage. That's probably the most accurate one. For Broken Sword 5, The Serpent's Curse for Switch. So this is one of those James talks about a game his review's already posted because of embargo timings segments. So you could just go read it if you don't like listening to my voice. You can instead hear my voice when you read it. But this is a point-and-click adventure game. It's a pretty traditional one. Kind of in the style of the old LucasArts one, where you find thing, combine things, and then use them on things.
Is this your first Broken Sword game?
It is. So are you experienced with this franchise, Guillaume?
More or less. I've played some of 3, which was the kind of the first one that they made in 3D, and it was surprisingly playable, but it was not point and click. It was actually kind of like Grim Fandango in that you had to control your character directly with the D-pad, I think. I was surprised at how well it played despite that. And I find that the comparison to LucasArts games, I thought the same thing, because the writing has kind of the same smart-ass quality.
Yes.
You know, where the banter or your main character is going to say something smart-assy about whatever it is that you're looking at or putting your tongue on or whatever it is, you
he's
know.
Be, like, he's depending being on shot the at and he's making a relatively flippant joke about it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So this one is actually a point-and-click adventure. So in a way. So you click and it moves your character around, and then they interact with stuff. It's not just like a floating mouse cursor in space. What I like about it mechanically, I mean, I've played a bunch of these. I was completely unaware of the Broken Sword franchise at all. I know that 5 was kickstarted, And I only know this because there's a section called stretch goals that doesn't work. And then when the credits play, it's like 20 minutes of Kickstarter backers. But thankfully the credits just have, I'm going to punch out button. The game itself is it's a fairly traditional point and click adventure that avoids some of the nastiness that can come from that genre. So if you're in a room, you're pretty much in that room until you're done with that room. You very rarely have to go somewhere else to get something to solve the puzzle in that room. It's usually there. And in the only instances where it does happen, a character explicitly tells you, you need to go get blank. I think there's only one time where they don't tell you where blank is, but even then you can only go to one other place because you'll pop up the map and only one other place is available. So it's like, well, I guess I'm going here. And then there's only one NPC in that space, so you can figure it out pretty fast. So pretty much everything is based around what's available to you or what you brought into the room already. And even the sections that you can play where you can choose a couple different spaces to explore in whatever order you want, that all works. So nothing. It's sort of like when we talked about the Zelda 3DS game. Which one was it?
Link Between Worlds?
Yeah, Link Between Worlds, where it's like there's a whole set of dungeons where it has to assume parity across all three of them. So there'll be like three spaces you have to explore, and there's no sequence to them, so they all work independently. And that means they also reveal the plot somewhat independently. But yeah, I mean, it mechanically works really well. There's only a couple puzzles at the end of the game where I'm like, I still don't follow what you were trying to make me do here. That's normal with kind of these point and click adventure games. You'll usually run into one or two, in a good one, you usually run into one or two where it's just like you brute force it and it's solved. But even then you're like, I don't entirely understand what I just did. There is, like, so there's maybe two or three, there's a really late game puzzle I solved, but the characters didn't realize it was solved. So it wouldn't let me advance until I solved another puzzle. And then it was like, oh, you solved it. And I'm like, fuck you, I had already solved it. But besides that, you know, the puzzles all work pretty well. They err on the easier side of things, versus the too obscure side, but they're still good enough. The game looks okay to good depending on your perspective. Some of the CG cutscenes kind of remind me of like early 2000 CG cartoons for children. And in my brain, shit like Code Lyoko pops up with the giant French foreheads. Like it's that weird CG where it looks kind of like Play-Doh and you're like, but generally things look fine. But Guillaume is right. So the story of this is in the review I call it like drugstore bookcase or drugstore bookshelf Dan Brown. But it's just like fucking throw it all in there. Art theft, murder, Gnostic occult practices, church doctrine, secret things, Russian mobs. Fucking toss it all in there. We're going to put this plot. We're going to put so much shit in here. It doesn't matter. And then they throw in a little bit of like where Dan Brown dare not go because, you know, he has all his church conspiracy stuff but and Gnostic knowledge and all those things. But he doesn't ever actually put supernatural shit in there because he's never going to have the audacity to write. And then fucking God showed up and punched Tom Hanks' character in the face. That's more of a like Indiana Jones thing where it's like, oh, yeah, you're just going to drink from the fucking cup from the Last Supper. Go nuts. The game sort of blends a little bit of that in there to the like supernatural stuff towards the end. And it's fine. Like it is pulpy as hell in terms of plot. Like it's just like, okay. Yeah. Well now we have, I mean the fucking Russian oligarch looks like Vladimir Putin. Like they're not even trying. He even kind of sounds like him, but it's just a certain amount of just, we're going to throw things together and whatever. It's a conspiracy. It takes enough twists where you're like, oh, fascists are here now. That's cool. All right, let's see where this rides. It's not a good plot per se, but it's amusing. Like it just sure. In the amount of swerves it's willing to take. Like there's a part where they're like, these look like Gnostic symbols, and I'm like, nope, fuck right out of here with this shit. Here we go. We're dealing with Gnosticism now. Fantastic. And then like five people have a conversation about Lucifer, and I'm like, I just, okay, well, here we go. This is the ride we're on now, boys and girls. But Guillaume is right. The banter is what makes this work. So you have this very European conspiracy going on where it's like you have Frenchmen, you have Russians, you have Englishmen, you've got people of, you got Spaniards. It's like this, basically Europe is just caught up in a stupid art theft ring. And then you have your stereotypical smooth-talking, good-looking American who shows up to solve all the problems. As is common in these kinds of like mystery book novels, this game's based on. And of course, he's smart alecky, and he knows how to solve a puzzle. And this isn't his first adventure, and all that stuff. George,
right? Whose job is like patent lawyer?
Yeah. So now he's a an investigator for an insurance company.
Exciting.
Yeah. Well, and Nico, his. I don't know if you take her all the way to femme fatale, maybe a little bit, but she is this. The game is insistent on you knowing that she is very charming, French woman who is a journalist who is kind of his co-conspirator in solving these mysteries, kind of his sidekick. I guess she's not in all of the games because he's running into characters from other games that she doesn't know, and he's kind of embarrassed for her to meet them.
Right. Well, maybe also sometimes they're in separate places in the same game. So
yeah. But really, what kind of does the heavy lifting for this plot? Because this plot is kind of ridiculous. Is just their banter, because George walks into a situation where he's being shot at by like an 80-year-old Spanish Marxist who fled from the fascists, who's firing a fucking agua bruser at him like it's the 1430s. And he's like making jokes about it and then sees a goat and freaks out because I guess there's a running gag in this game about goats. I don't know. Or in this series. And so he's just making smart-ass comments the whole time. And the role of Nico in that is just to take the piss out of his commentary. Just like make fun of him a little bit, or just walk right up to the goat and pet it after he gets thrown out in front of bullets by it. Like there's a dynamic there that actually works for those two characters in the context of this really silly story.
Yeah.
And it's not deliberately silly, I don't think. I think it's just really pulpy. There's definitely intentional humor here. A lot of the characters are weird and goofy. Apparently there's a running cast of miscreants that the series leverages heavily, and they show up and you get kind of a feel for them. But yeah, I mean, it is a very effective, if not particularly inspired, point and click game. Like mechanically it's sound. My biggest issue with the game is that sometimes it takes them forever to walk between things, and so you'll just sit there and watch them walk for a while you wait, and then have to walk back to the thing you pressed first because you have to press them in the right order and you screwed it up. But beyond that, like it's a perfectly functional point and click that in an era where we were getting more of them, if you take it back to like the golden age, it would probably, you know, be an also-ran that nobody really gave much attention to. But in the with the relative paucity of them that are coming out right now, like it, if you like this genre and you've not played these Broken Sword games, you should probably check it out. You know, I played it mostly undocked. It does support touchscreen, but if you use the cursor with control sticks, it changes when you're over things you can interact with, which is just sort of like if you're just frustrated, you can just scan the screen real fast and find the things you can interact with. So I did that more often than the touchscreen. Some of the puzzles, the touchscreen was more useful. There's one where you have to like transliterate a pictographic language, and that was much easier being able to just tap the thing I need to associate it with rather than scroll through a list. But I would describe it as a good enough one of these that's worth playing if you're a fan of the genre. But it's definitely a situation where if the writing wasn't as effective as it is, in terms of just like being funny, not in terms of delivering a great mystery. This game probably wouldn't have rated above a 6.5, maybe a 7.
Right.
I ended up giving it a 7.5 and kind of leaning maybe a little above that because I just had fun with it. It's about 7-ish hours, I guess. It's not super long.
Yeah, I play these games for the dialogues, for the chuckles, you know, so
yeah.
I don't really care so much about the puzzles. If people want to start from the start, there was actually the first Broken Sword got a kind of a remake / remaster on the Wii and the DS.
Oh,
now,
weird.
The DS version is kind of compromised, I think. It's not super playable because the resolution is just so low. But the Wii version, they redid the graphics, I think, and they kept touting the fact that Dave Gibbons was back to kind of redraw the game. And it's an artist who's mostly known for Watchmen. I don't know.
That's
it might
cool.
be of interest to some people, yeah.
Coming in completely blind, the game does a pretty good job of introducing you to these characters. But the thing is, because it kind of expects most of the... Because this is a Kickstarter game. It's for fans of the series. It kind of expects you to know them already, which in a way is a benefit, because a lot of games, if they don't think you know the characters, spend way too much time introducing them. Because like, oh, we've got to catch you up on 4 games of backstory. Well, not really. These characters are fairly atomic. I can figure out who Georges is because I've seen him in a bunch of other... Not him, but I've seen lots of archetypes like him. You know, he is filling an archetype. Nico is an archetype. This priest who's wandering around going, it is a demon! Like, he is filling an archetype. I don't need you to introduce me to him. Just let the story roll and I'll figure him out. And so it kind of gets out of the way a little bit. Like, you get a real quick introduction to who these people are. I mean... When Nico shows up, he goes, oh, this is Nico. She's a journalist. She's been a friend. We've gone on some adventures together. End. That's the end of her introduction. Then she just starts talking. And that's perfect because that's all I needed. And from there, she told me who she was. I would say this game is voice acted almost completely. The only stuff that's not voice acted is like some internal monologues where I just get a pop up like, that wouldn't make any sense to do or things like that. And it's actually pretty decent. The accents sound authentic. I'm not going to say they are, but looking through the credits as the very long credits as they rolled, they seem to be, which is nice. Like there was no, well, there was one or two where I'm like, that's not really a Frenchman. But for the most part, yeah, it seemed pretty on point. And considering the number of accents and stuff that show up in this game, I mean, there's a little bit of like Mary Poppins English accent here, but not the Dick Van Dyke one, like actual English people just playing it up. But it's not, you know, it's not like a, it's not distracting, which is like the actual delivery is good, which is important because so much of the game's charm comes from its writing and its dialogue. As I was playing Guillaume, I thought, I bet Guillaume would like this. It is a little pricey. I think it's $30. Like I said, it's not very long.
Right. I can afford to wait because I think I've got the first two games bought on GOG.com.
There you go.
It's one of those things where I buy games and don't play them. So
yeah.
Maybe but, one day.
But if you're worried about coming in without having played the franchise at all, it's fine. You know, and I'll keep an eye out if they release more of these or if they bring more of them to Switch. I might take another stab at one. I don't know that I want to review another one because it's kind of tough to review a game that's like, yeah, it's good. It's good, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, it's good. If you like these kinds of games and the price doesn't give you a little bit of... And that's the only reason I mentioned the price and the length is like, look, it is a short game depending on how fast you solve some of these puzzles. I'm estimating 7 hours because my Switch won't tell me for 2 more days how long it took me to play it. Thanks, Nintendo. But it's not more than 10. Like, if keep in mind, some of that I was also watching, like, football, so I wasn't paying it full attention. So, you know, it's not super long. But if that's okay, then, like, go for it. I've played much worse adventure games. And there's been a little renaissance of them on Switch, so I appreciate that. All right. So, John, I want you to tell me what it's like to play Ice Climbers.
It is a form of slow torture.
I would say it's instant torture.
Mm-hmm. But slow. Very slow. Terrible controls in that game.
Oh, they're abysmal.
Pretty much you just have to assume that even though you're jumping up and to the left, you're not going to really go left. Well, you're going to go a tiny bit left.
Is it the controls or is it just terrible physics?
It's really terrible physics.
Yeah, is it really the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah, it's terrible physics that make your character extremely hard and...
impossible.
Yeah, very unpredictable to control.
Yeah. But we're actually talking about the Nintendo Online's NES. Nintendo Online launched this week, and with that came the first 20?
Yeah, I believe so.
NES games, and we've played a bunch of them.
Yeah, let me boot this bad boy up here. All right, so let's see. Yeah, James and I hopped on last night.
Three full hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pre-ordered the $20 card from Amazon, or code. And, so we hopped on there, and let's see, we played, I think the top, so our whole thing with that was trying to play kind of co-op and which games were the best for co-op, right?
Right.
And I think, James, the best games that we had for co-op, I think, in my opinion, are Ice Hockey, River City Ransom.
Says the man who destroyed me, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think that's, to me, it's one of the most fun NES games, but... Ice Hockey, River City Ransom, and Tecmo Bowl. I think those were my three favorites. I don't know what yours were.
Yeah, I pro wrestling is terrible.
It's a terrible game.
But at the same time, like, I had fun playing it because it is so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point we were discussing what a pay-per-view would be like if it was just we were like bouncing off the ropes and just running into each other, like not even throwing punches, just slabs of meat slamming into one another and then falling on the ground.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out, like, what would this pay-per-view be called and how much would they be booing?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
But let's actually talk about the NES service. Like, so a couple things we've already learned. It's an emulator mm-hmm. with the games wrapped in it. Why don't you describe what the experience is?
All right. Well, you download the emulator like an app. So, you know, you go onto the eShop and it's listed there and you download it and you boot it up and you choose your profile, which is kind of key. We'll talk about that in a little bit. You choose your profile, which profile you want to run it under, just like any other game. And you are presented with a screen that shows all 20 games. And you have the choice on the left-hand side on whether or not to play single player, two-player, which would be local two-player, or play online, and then there's a settings icon, too, where you can change things like you can set up low latency mode, which is something...
So good.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. You wouldn't think there'd be much lag, but it is a little bit laggy in certain cases. But yeah, so you choose a game. Now, it's important when you're playing online... we had kind of a hard time kind of trying to find each other, even though James was in my friends list and he was online. I still couldn't see him because it shows you a list of people that are also online that you could potentially join up with. It's almost
and
like
in
going,
the game.
Yeah, and in game. So it's almost like seeing like who has. So was that your problem originally, James, when you didn't have a game running?
Yeah. So
okay.
So I set up a game with Greg while we were waiting for you to get on, and as long as somebody has gone into the start playing and wait for someone to join, they show up in that list.
Right, and that's an option. It says when you do go online, it says start a game and wait for someone to come online. So almost flag yourself as being open to playing with somebody, and then you'll show up in your friend's friend list. So once
right.
James did that, I was able to find him. And we started playing pro wrestling at that point. Yeah. And it's kind of strange because it's almost like, it has kind of like a screen sharing sort of dynamic to it because one person has control. So even though you can go to the suspend screen where you create save points or do whatever, I'm not too sure exactly what it is in online. I forget what it is, but it'll say that, you know, James has control. So you can't really do anything. Like, you can't exit out. You can't, you know, I mean, you can drop off on, you can drop offline entirely, but you can't, if somebody else has control, or I guess is the host, which is probably, which would probably be a better way for them to phrase it. If someone is the host, then you can't choose a different game, for example. So there's that kind of concept of sort of almost like a host client sort of thing going on, where one person is the person that calls the shots. So, yeah, so once we got all that sorted out, you know, we were able to play, and it was good. I mean, it was just like playing any other game online for the games that had two-player modes in them. The lag was a little bit weird. Even when we had the low latency mode set, which was a little bit hard to find and a little bit hard to figure out, and frankly, I wouldn't have known about it if I hadn't read it in an article beforehand. Even once we had that set, there was still lag in some of these games, like Gradius, and, you know, and really I think throughout there was lag. And some of that might have been on my side. I mean, I know that, you know, in my apartment complex, my internet connection gets really, really poor in the evenings, just because probably everybody uses the same line going out of the complex and they just kill it with Netflix or whatever. So that's nothing new, but it was interesting because the way the game reacts to it is everything slows down. So the game, I found that the game doesn't slow down that much at all, but the music does, which is strange. Yes.
So it was so funny once you realized it was happening.
Yeah, and then once you realize it's happening, you kind of can't unhear it. You can't stop noticing it. So, but it didn't really mess with gameplay very much, aside from maybe Gradius a little bit, but Gradius is just incredibly difficult to begin with. But yeah, we started making the rounds, it's good. I mean, we played baseball. Baseball is kind of long and primitive.
So you're saying it's accurate?
It's accurate. It's just like real life baseball.
It's just real life baseball. Well, so no, it's not, because in real life baseball, the outfielders actually do something.
Yeah, it's true. Your outfielders really don't do anything in this game. They typically just watch balls go by them.
So I put up that's what I do. Sometimes I run away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So I put up, what, 13 runs on you?
I think the final was 12 to 9.
And like 8 of my runs were just because your center fielder was apparently terrified of spherical objects.
Yeah, yeah.
And just ran in the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult to kind of figure out where you're going to try to hit the ball, or, you know,
how to field it, or how to get it back into the, or how to advance your runners, or how to steal, or how to bunt, but I don't think you can bunt, how to throw your pitches. Everything's bad in this game.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, baseball's not great. Let's see.
It was a Black Label game.
Yep. We played Donkey Kong, which is good. Donkey Kong's good. We enjoyed that a lot.
John goaded me into going for the purse, and I ended up dying.
Yes. Yep. That's second stage up there in the top right.
Did he goad you with the little hand cursor thing?
No, he didn't. He did it with his voice, because we were not using the Nintendo app, as you can imagine, because it's trash. Mm-hmm. We were using Skype, and John's like, "You gotta get the purse, man. You gotta get the purse.
Be a man, James. Be a man. Get the purse.
You're gonna let that woman not have her purse."
Mm-hmm.
And then I died. So the answer should have been yes.
Now the applause hands are something else entirely.
I was the primary offender with the applause hands.
Yeah, they're kind of they were disappointing to me, because you can't even really troll people very well with them, like. What they are is they're a little hand icon that you can hover over the screen, and then you click your analog stick in order to clap, and it plays a little applause noise.
It's the hand from a few things, but most recently Mario Maker.
Yep. Yeah. So you do that, and you know, each person has a hand that they can hover over the screen, and you can kind of troll somebody with it, because a lot of the characters in these games are fairly small, and you can almost cover them up with the hand entirely. But yeah, so they're just kind of our remark on that was that it was a very, very Nintendo thing to have in there.
Yeah.
You know, just something very goofy that's meant to entertain somebody who may not be doing anything, because some of these games they're flip-flop two-player. So one player goes, then the other player goes. One player goes, the other player goes. None of them are right. really true co-op.
A lot of them are. We played Double Dragon, which is just like that.
Yep.
Which
is not great. That game is just not good.
No.
It was amazing because that game...
Isn't Double Dragon 2 the one that's got proper two-player?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird because it's on the NES Classic Mini, so I assume we'll get there. It just seems weird that they went back to the first one for this, considering you'd think they'd want to lean into the co-op angle, as we said before, but...
So that's actually what we were talking about last night. It was like, you'd think they'd have more co-op games in this than they do.
Yep.
But they don't, so I don't understand. Because we play... Let's see, what else do we play that was like that? It was like rotating.
Dr. Mario. The rotating co-op ones? Let's see.
There was another one.
Let's see. Yeah, there probably was. I'll go down.
Mario.
Right, yes. Yep. Super Mario Bros.
The thing about both Mario and Double Dragon is that you go till you die.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I went on a fucking tear in Double Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And so John basically just sat there for, like, 5 minutes.
I didn't really care.
You could have passed the controller, though, no?
I didn't really want to play. That's the whole thing. Yeah. The game kind of sucks.
I wanted him to play.
Yeah, you did. You did.
It's... Here's the thing. Do I think this is worth... This is definitely not worth the price of admission for the online service just yet, on its own.
I would agree with that, but I still think it's worthwhile. I mean, there's enough games.
Oh, totally.
There's enough games on it, and I mean, am I impressed right now? Am I going to be impressed like 3 months from now? Probably not, because a lot of the games that they're putting on are like Mighty Bob Jack, Solomon's Key, stuff like
that.
I don't really care about it.
It's one of the things we kind of talked about prospectively with this model that they're pursuing is the idea that maybe, you know, an upside to it could be that you kind of get past the drip feed of past services, especially, you know, kind of on Wii U, where it felt like it was very sort of consciously slowed down from Virtual Console on Wii, which even you know, itself slowed down and then eventually kind of stopped with WiiWare. But 3 updates a month is pretty slow. It's not even one a week. So that is not the most auspicious start in terms of for how they're going to update it. But, you know, it is the beginning of it's a pretty big step for them, even though it's kind of belated. And, stuff like your PS Plus is very different today than what it was when it started. So, yeah. I mean, we were aware this is going to go and how well it might turn out eventually. I'm kind of open-minded. You know, they will get a lot of feedback and hopefully it'll sort of mature and evolve. But for now, it's kind of cute and for me, necessary because I do enjoy playing Splatoon online, Mario Tennis online. I'm definitely going to be playing Smash Brothers online in a matter of months, so it's pretty much, you know, it's got to happen, so at least something is coming along with it, and I just look forward to, you know, maybe some more of those co-op kind of friendly NES games, you know, coming in, like a Super C, stuff like that. But I've got that on the NES Classic Mini, for instance, but probably not going to do any co-op locally. So the online could be useful.
Yeah, I mean, and the online plays just fine. I mean, lag aside, it's just like having somebody beside you playing on your NES. There's no difference. Let's see, other stuff we played, Dr. Mario. It's pretty good. It's Dr. Mario.
Yeah.
We didn't play Excitebike because Excitebike is Excitebike. Ghosts and Goblins is just so hard that we didn't even bother. Gradius is very difficult. Ice Climber is trash. Ice Hockey is god level.
Even Ice Hockey is really primitive. Like, is a really primitive
hockey
game.
But is this one of the... Because I know pro wrestling is literally the first time that's come back for a long, long time. But with ice hockey, they haven't re-released it as much as some of their stuff.
Yeah, Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, because I don't think ice hockey... I don't remember being on Virtual Console.
I don't think it was. So the weird thing about ice hockey is that you're always controlling the goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like this weird mental thing you have to do in your head, because you're still controlling another defenseman.
Yep.
So you just kind of have to mentally say, I'm not going to control this defenseman. I'm going to control the goalie now.
Yep.
And that can be hard to do. And then John goes up.
It kind of sounds like table football.
Yeah, well, it kind of looks like table football. In fact, I think we compared it when they were skittering around on the ice at one point. We compared it to table football.
Mm-hmm. Yep. See, Mario Brothers. We played Mario Brothers, right?
For a minute.
Yeah, for a minute. Pro wrestling, trash. River City Ransom, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, so that was weird because it is, in some ways, it's just as primitive as Double Dragon, but in a bunch of other ways, it's completely, like, light years ahead of it.
Yeah.
In terms of depth and mechanics. But in terms of, like, explaining what the hell's going on, does not care, will not bother, will not do it.
Nope.
Hey, a bunch of your stats have gone up. What do these stats mean? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Let's see, we didn't play soccer because who cares?
That's correct.
Super Mario Brothers.
Somewhere, a listener just has a single tear running down their cheek.
Well, if they're a fan of soccer, they won't know how long it'll take to get to the bottom of their face, so it's fine.
Right.
I played plenty of soccer games and enjoyed them, but the NES one does not have a great reputation from everything I've ever heard, and I've never played it. So,
yeah.
Hopefully, for people who do want that, I mean, I think the old sort of arcadey sports sort of stuff is a good niche for this. It, just as long as they can get to some of the more advanced ones as well would be nice. But I guess we'll see.
Alternate joke for that was, well, just like real soccer, they're fake tears anyway. Boom. Nailed it.
All right. Moving right along.
Well, I don't know whether he'd get to that depth of method acting with the, you know, it's more the...
Well, it's the magic I feel better spray.
Yeah, the sponge back in the day. There's a sponge that the physio used to bring on that quite remarkable properties.
My God, his leg is snapped in half from that zero contact spray. Oh, he's all better now.
All right. Super Mario Brothers 3, it sure is nice playing that with a real D-pad. It's pretty good.
This
was with the Pro Controller, was it?
I was playing, yeah, I played that with the Pro Controller.
It's which isn't the greatest D-pad.
No,
it's not the greatest D-pad, but, you know, coming from the ghetto, the D-pad ghetto that I'm coming from on the 3DS, yeah. So,
I want you to get to the exact same spot and just go, like, I can't pass the shit. Fuck this D-pad, too.
No, man, I got skills with that with the Pro Controller D-pad. All right, Tecmo Bowl is fantastic. Really, you know, it was funny, but really, James, like before you and I played this, I was never really a huge fan of Tecmo Bowl, but I didn't actually realize how close it is, how closely it plays to like Tecmo Super Bowl, which is one of my favorite games ever, and it's kind of like it's a primitive version of Tecmo Super Bowl, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's the first game. But I always felt like it was almost more like in my mind, it was almost more of like a 10-yard fight kind of thing, like really primitive and really crappy, but it's not. It's actually pretty fun.
Yeah. In fact, Greg and I just played it, and Greg beat the shit out of
me. Yeah, it was the first game of Tecmo Bowl I ever played just before this call.
It was my fourth, so.
It was not exactly a clinic in Tecmo bowling.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I've played so much Tecmo Bowl in my life, Tecmo Super Bowl, that you can use all the same tricks on Tecmo Bowl. So
it's surprisingly fun being able to talk with somebody while you're playing it, especially when you just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
When you're like, hey, I think I got a safety for not taking the ball out. Let's try that again. Oh, I did.
Well, it's
That's
just so stupid.
Right.
Like Tecmo Bowl games, they're just really stupid and just dumb fun, right?
Yeah.
Like
it's
can't take
barely
it seriously.
Football.
Yeah. We did play tennis, which was
we were awful.
Yeah.
So tennis devolved at one point into both of us just running around in circles on our side of the court, plus using the hand and having that run around. So it was just this like blur of shit happening on screen. Cause we were so bad.
Yeah. It's pretty terrible. And then, we did not play Zelda and we did not play Yoshi. So
yeah.
Skip those guys.
I played a little bit of Yoshi. It's fine. It's a puzzle. It's a boring puzzle game that just goes for a while
because
it's very easy. Dr. Mario, we played. John was a little more down on Dr. Mario than I was.
People were kind of giving me grief about Dr. Mario.
I think we just had it turned way too low.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on Twitter, I was like, yeah, it's kind of meh. And, like, you know, some people took issue with that. You know, obviously, Dr. Mario fans in the house. I didn't know. They're lurking in the corners, you know?
We call them pill poppers, John.
Yeah, it was Dr. Mario fans, you know, and those viruses. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's a puzzle game. It's, you know, I'm not going to get too crazy over it because it doesn't have – I mean, it does have, you know, two-player competitive mode. It's fine. It's a fucking puzzle game. Like, just calm your tits, people.
Leave John alone.
He's just mad I beat him.
You did.
Like when we played on default, which is, like, super slow and easy.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, ah, fuck this. And then I jacked up my own speed and difficulty. And, like, I got about three pills in. I was like, I just reset the whole game on John. I'm like, absolutely not. John's got, like, two viruses to clear. I have, like, 30. And the pills are dropping at about eight times the speed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, nope. Reset.
Yep. Let's see. Some other quick hits. I do like the kind of the four save slots per game. And you can save. I mean, you can roll through saves really, really quickly. So if you want to do, actually, I was doing that and I saw somebody do this on Twitter and it completely works in Mario 3 is when you get to the huts that have you opening the chests, you can save just before you open a chest and then see what it has and then reload and it'll give you something better possibly because it's something different every time you reload it.
Reroll essentially. Yep. You know, if you want to get something better.
So
I mean, it's in a lot of ways it seems really closely modeled on the classic mini consoles.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you've got the three different options for kind of regular kind of 4:3 display, then you've got the pixel by pixel display, and then you've got the kind of filter version, you know, to put the scan lines and the, you know, the sort of fuzziness of a CRT on top of it. And then, yeah, the four slots to save a suspend point kind of thing, all that. So it's all really similar in that case. The one thing that caught me by surprise a little bit is when I kind of booted it up, Super Mario Brothers in particular, just playing that, and I thought, oh, you know, the colours seem different. They seem kind of dull compared to the NES Classic Mini. But then I was playing it on the Switch itself, so I was kind of maybe, you know, it's the TV that just, you know, makes it look different. But I couldn't do this literally side by side because it's on the same TV. But, you know, one after the other, it is just duller for some reason, the way it's tuned here than it was on the NES Classic Mini, which is weird when everything else about it is so similar.
Yeah. Yep.
So, quick observation, based on some changes that have come to Switch as a consequence of this release, the video support does go in the NES Classic games, so you can capture videos. I captured one of my outfielders running very slowly after one of John's line drives in center field.
nice.
The other thing is they added the ability to tweet multiple photos at the same or multiple screenshots at the same time.
That's pretty sweet.
So the old kind of before and after type of deal.
Yeah. So before it was like, no, you can only do one at a time on Switch, but it's got to be from the same software. There is a weird restriction of your screenshot has to be from the same game. I think it treats all the NES games though as the same game.
Yeah, because it's the same app. You load it from the same place.
Right.
So yeah.
So John, we'll wrap this up, but give me one or two games you want on the service. Like, if you saw it was coming, you'd be like, oh damn.
I don't know, man. Right now, like for NES games, man, it's really tough to say because with so many games out on Virtual Console and I own so many games on Virtual Console, it's tough for me to say a couple of games that I would want it would have to be something that I would want to play specifically. Specifically portably, right.
Yeah, either the portable aspect or the online aspect has really got to kind of bring it forward in your mind. Because I'm going to say I've got, you know, so many old games scattered across my PAL Wii, my Japanese Wii, my multiple 3DSs. You know, like it's because you had the game sharing coming with the 6.0 firmware update, which is welcome.
Right.
Because I think we all anticipate there probably will be a Switch family of systems one day. And I might well end up having more than one, and that would be useful. But there's sort of a bitter component to it because of how badly I could have used that across my 3DS devices over the years, but such is life. But in terms of like ones that I'm looking at in particular, yeah, like I said, Super C's big because I mean I just played through that single player in on the NES Mini. It's really good. And I think co-op on that could be a lot of fun. But other than that, I don't know. It's interesting. Like portably, I guess I was put off a bit by the 3DS emulation quality. I just didn't like very much at all. I mean, I played Simon's Quest on there, and you know, leaving Simon's Quest aside, just looking at it was not pleasant because it was not pixel for pixel. And so it was like slightly stretched, and it got kind of fuzzy when it was scrolling in with your NES games with any kind of detail and stuff. So it could be, you know, some games like, so not Simon's Quest in particular, but you know, games like that that are portable friendly, you know, maybe a bit more extended in nature that I'd be interested to see.
Yeah, I mean, for me, probably I've already mentioned it, but Tecmo Super Bowl would definitely be one of them. Double Dragon 2 would be cool. There's a bunch, but yeah, that's the thing. It's like it's interesting because I now have to think of NES games in terms of playing them online, and that's, I can't even wrap my brain around that right now.
It's pretty crazy. Some of the brawlers like TMNT2, not the bad one.
Yeah.
Never make the jump because of the license, but the Spy versus Spy game is a weirdly compelling two-player experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's probably a Bomberman out there that would be a good choice.
Yep, yeah, Bomberman games would be really good.
On the NES?
There's a couple Bomberman games on the NES.
I'm sure there is, yeah.
Okay. But just two players is just...
Yeah, but I mean, it would be... I mean, for a free game, I'll take it.
Yeah. That's where it would get, you know, more fun when it does... If and when it were to progress to Super Nintendo... You get to things like, you know, you could talk about some of the brawlers on there, but, you know, like five-player Bomberman was on Super Nintendo, right?
And, yeah.
You know, three-player Secret of Mana, stuff like that. You know, it's, I kind of feel like, it's like I said, I mean, these are some early NES games, so there's definitely, you know, more to mine in that space, but Super Nintendo would probably be the most exciting for me, but we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah,
I mean, for Super Nintendo, you can get like into deep Gradius games and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. The one thing I will touch on just quickly is the whole Japanese account stuff. So I did, you know, because you can download the app using a Japanese account, so you can get the Japanese version of it. So the way you do that is really easy. You just go to accounts.nintendo.com. And you set up an account. A brand new account has to be tied to a unique email address, so it can't be the same email address that you use for your North American account. And you just set Japan as the country, and then you create a new profile on your Switch. You create that profile, link it to that new account, the Japanese account, and from that point on, when you go into the eShop, you go onto the Japanese eShop, and then you can download it from there.
And you go into the eShop and select that account. Because whatever you want,
correct.
To
yeah,
shop,
correct. Yes, with that profile, right? Yep. Yeah. You select that the Japanese profile, and then you go into the Japanese eShop and you download the Famicom version of that Switch Online app. And from that point on, you can download. You're playing the Japanese versions of all the games, and it has a Japanese box art and everything. So it's pretty cool. And you can have them running side by side. And when you launch the Famicom version of it, you just use your North American account. And it works just fine. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really neat. So I suggest there's no reason not to do it, so I suggest everybody do it.
Yeah.
The box arts, as we've discussed recently with the email, are nicer in general on the Famicom one, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a lot cooler.
The River Sea Ransom box art is pretty wretched on the Western one.
Oh, terrible.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
not to mention the amount that are just a simple black box style.
Yeah, to be fair, like River City Ransom being clearly based in America, they weren't as able to be as creative.
Yes.
I don't know why that just kept slaying me every time we would see something that's clearly Japanese and then they would have like an American name next to it. It'd be like Thomas's Sushi. It's like, well, all yeah. right. All right, Thomas, your sushi is I'm sure it's high quality.
Yep. Yeah, but overall so far, thumbs up from me in terms of the online service. I'm pretty pleased with it. You know, it has a couple wrinkles here and there that still need to be ironed out, but it's pretty good. It's fun. Definitely worth it to play NES games online, for sure.
Yeah, my biggest beef is what it's always been with their online stuff, is that we had to use Skype to communicate.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, we didn't even think about it. We're just like, we're going to use Skype.
Yeah, I mean, our only thought was, do we want to be able to talk or not? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, should we use the Nintendo app? Should we Skype? It was just like, okay, do we want to talk? No. Yeah, we should be talking. Okay, Skype it is then.
Yep.
Which sucks, like, because if I could just hop in there and just be like, hey, John, I'm inviting you to join my NES party.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yep.
The other feature I would love to see them add is having more than two people in the room.
Yeah, like having groups or something like that. I mean, just more useful sort of group or party functionality would be great.
Yeah, because like if you could have chairs, and even if it's only like the old card games online. Not that I used to gamble online in card games or anything, but you could have like there'd be like five chairs. But you could spectate. You could have like six, seven people in the room, and they would just take a chair when somebody left.
Yeah.
Or you could just stand up, and somebody else could sit down. Just the ability to like have a group of people, and maybe only two of you are playing, but the rest of you are just shooting the shit. Mm-hmm. And that turns into more of a social experience than just a game.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, most of what we got out of this was the social experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it was like, hey, John, what do you think happens if I just hit you in the head with this pipe? Oh, you died.
Yep.
Or me going, John, just knock a Bobo off the conveyor belt. Don't try to kill him, please.
Yeah. Agreed.
Also, the Double Dragon fighting game is terrible.
Yeah, it is.
It's awful. All right. Cool. Well, Greg.
Yes.
Speaking of retro games.
Yeah, so Sega Ages finally kind of appeared. They confirmed the Japanese date for ages, and they had it on the coming soon section of that eShop and everything, and then it just showed up everywhere like the day after without any of that fanfare. But you know, it is finally here, and Thunder Force 4, aka Lightning Force, is something I've had my eye on for a very long time. It's a pretty legendary shooter series, kind of held up as you know, one of the things that one of the sort of big best exponents of the kind of game that a Genesis, Mega Drive could do really well, Super Nintendo couldn't do so well. Pushing a lot of stuff on the screen and going really fast and whatnot. So it's always been like, I was very happy being primarily a Nintendo person back in the 16-bit era, but it's one of those sort of branches of the industry at the time that I would have liked to have played more. And years later, it's kind of, it didn't get put on Virtual Console or anything like that for a long time.
Right, it doesn't get put on all those freaking compilations that Sega has put out.
Speaking of which, Switch is getting one of those.
Yeah, Switch is getting that, which originally was kind of like, the other consoles are getting the full Genesis collection or whatever, whereas we're going to do the Ages, you know, sort of focused, very sort of carefully curated and upgraded and M2 quality sort of releases for Switch. But then it's like,
they announced it right around the launch. It's so dumb.
At the same time, yeah. But I assume it's going to be like, especially for the package market, maybe. Maybe it's just too much to ignore in terms of, you know, people scoop those up. I mean, you see, because it is kind of akin to like having the mini consoles in a way. If you've got a Switch, isn't it? That's just like, you know, you get your 30 NES games on an NES Classic Mini. I mean, how many are on that Genesis collection? It's quite a lot, isn't it?
So
you get that. You get a pretty sort of big sampling of some of the most prominent games on that system and whatnot. But yeah, stuff like Thunder Force has kind of eluded these things for a long time, and talked about the fact that I found a physical copy to play on my Japanese Mega Drive of Thunder Force 3 on eBay for a pretty good price, and then like the day after, virtually, or you know, it was very, very shortly that they announced, Sega announced, like, oh, they've kind of snapped up whatever extra rights they needed to put out Thunder Force 3 as a 3D classic on that final compilation of 3D classics in Japan, which has not been localized or anything like that. And I guess the way 3DS is winded down, it probably won't be. But that was okay. You know, 3 has got a good reputation. That's why I bought the cartridge and all that. But 4 is, you know, kind of regarded as the best, and so you're kind of hoping that one day they're going to get to 4. And here we are. It's on Switch. One thing I will say, just from playing it today, is that it would have been fantastic as a 3D classic.
Oh, yeah.
Because the amount of layers of parallax and all this stuff kind of scrolling super fast around the screen, you have some very kind of wide open, like multiple screens high play fields in some cases, and you've got layers of clouds and mountains and then going down into, you know, water and all this kind of stuff. It really would have been brought out beautifully by the stereoscopic 3D effect. I'm sure, you know, having played a bit of 3 as well, that's true in that case, but it seems like 4 is even more so. So that's kind of sad that that's not going to happen, but still, you know, what you've got here is a really good, as you'd expect from M2, kind of presentation of the game. To a fair extent, it's sort of based on, I think, what the work they did all the way back on Sega Saturn for it, because there was like a twin pack, I think, of Thunder Force 3 and 4 on Sega Saturn. And that added things like the easier difficulty, which is dubbed kids difficulty here, and I think Super R-Type had a kids difficulty as well, if I remember correctly, at least in Japan, which is the version I had. You get an option, if you beat the game, to play with the craft from Thunder Force 3 in 4, and you know, it has some sort of effect on the gameplay as well as your cosmetic. So you know, you got those sort of extra features there. Then on top of that, you've got all the kind of suspend points, very much like the NES Classic, and then you've got all the display options. You've got the option to go pixel by pixel, which, of course, you know, this is something that comes up with the NES Classics as well. You know, that will look different in handheld than it will on the TV in terms of how much of the display it takes up, because, of course, you're switching from 720p to 1080p.
Right.
And whereas with 720, it's pretty much a sort of... you know, the integer sort of scaling is pretty easy there, and it's still going to take up most of the screen. On 1080p, it's going to be more letterboxed. But obviously, you can just stretch it and whatnot, but I always go for the pixel by pixel modes if they've got them, because it's just so much crisper. I just can't not use it. And the other thing, I guess, is that on Switch, versus being on 3DS, just the sheer size of the screen is useful, because there is a lot of stuff going on. Is it with all these background layers, enemies, bullets? It's very visually busy, so I think it benefits. I mean, you're optimally really on the TV, with the D-pad and all that good stuff, but it's certainly playable handheld. I played through kind of the first phase of the game, where you pick. You've got 4 stages, and you can pick what sequence you want to play them in, and then it kind of moves into a second phase, which is interesting, because your ship actually gets an upgrade. It changes, and you get a new power up, where you get this sort of passive charge shot, which where if you don't fire for a while, it uncorks this huge lightning kind of strike. So you know, it's kind of interesting to see a scrolling shooter have a sort of gameplay wrinkle in there like that halfway through the game. I've seen quite a few levels, bosses. It's all really cool stuff, and so far I haven't managed to get to the end, but I don't think it's crazy hard. It's not like ridiculous stuff, and there are easier sort of difficulties to pick anyway. But if you can do it, I think normally, then you can get on the quote unquote export leaderboards. You know, it's kind of like the Hamster Arcade Archives lead. There's two leaderboards, you know, like there's the real ones, and then there's the ones for, you know, people who just kind of cleared the game however they did it. So, you know, you've got pretty much impeccable kind of presentation for it and everything, and eventually when they went up, the manual that was in there was pretty useful. It's just a web page, you know, type of thing, kind of like being on the eShop, and it's got the two manuals together, Sonic, the other release for Sega Ages today, and Thunder Force, and you know, you'll go through all, yeah, what all the pickups are and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's something I've been wanting to play for ages, and this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, I also got this game just because of the reputation, and because I'm kind of a sucker for you know, retro games that I've never played before, and so I could not pass this up. But I keep forgetting when I get a shooter that I'm not good at them. But this one is a good one because of the kids mode, which is what I decided, you know, after trying my luck at the adult mode, I switched to kids mode, and I could make it a little bit further. But it's a good one because of the stage select, which,
yeah, you get to see, you get to sample a bunch of levels,
yeah,
for a bit, rather than just bang your head against the wall the same thing for however long.
Yeah, I'm not a pro at shooters like this, but I like to be a shooter tourist, and so like this is perfect for me. Yeah, I did make it through the first four levels. One thing, like some of the display options, I'm playing on my TV. My TV has some issues. It's getting a little bit old. But and I'm sitting too far away from it. But I tried initially to go with the smoothing plus scan lines option, and I picked the stage that is all dark. It's kind of, you're going through like these starships.
Yeah, the kind of Armada attack scenario.
Yeah, yeah, and it was way too dark, and so I had to switch it back immediately. So I don't know if it's just because of that stage or because of my TV, but the scan lines were not a good option. Yeah, other than that, like I don't really, it may not be the kind of shooter that I enjoy, because there's a lot of, in most stages, you can scroll up and down.
The Armada stage is like the exception, isn't it? That's the one that's like really tightly enclosed, whereas a lot of them, like I said, are very open. And that's where I think I like the fact that it's got a number of features that I like from this sort of 90s era of shooters, where the speed is something that you toggle yourself, mm-hmm. rather than being a sort of a additive power up thing, right. You know, for so therefore, if you've got a big open stage, let's kick it up to max speed and I could zip around. But if in that Armada scenario, where sometimes you've got to weave through, you know, tight gaps between chips and bullets and all that, you could slow it down so you don't clonk yourself straight into something. So I like that component of it, certainly. And there's some other elements of it that are a bit sort of like act racer, I thought, but go on.
Yeah, just
Axley.
Axley. I was wondering, what is he talking about? Anyway, like the scrolling thing kind of annoys me, because I'm always constantly thinking, like, well, what am I missing at the bottom of the stage now? Well, am I missing the enemies at the top of the stage? And yeah, you're constantly missing enemies. Some sort of maybe a radar view in the corner might have been good, but the game is so busy, probably too much to ask, and also like it probably would get you killed more often than not. It's interesting. I don't regret my purchase, but I think I'm the title I'm looking forward to most is Phantasy Star, which I've attempted to play on the Phantasy Star Collection on GBA, but the nature of the game, which is kind of a dungeon crawler with these 3D mazes in first person, made it so that it was a less than optimal portable experience, especially when you don't have any graph paper next to you.
Yeah, that one didn't have an auto map, right?
It did not.
Awful.
So this release will add an Otomap, which
Yay!
Will make it, I think, more playable,
I mean, I can tell you, the one game I am kind of playing in the background is Bard's Tale from the Bard's Tale the remastered trilogy. The original Bard's Tale was exactly that with no Otomap, and it was awful. I never played it, and I hated that game. But the remastered one has an Otomap, and it makes a world of difference. Mm. It's so much more playable.
So you're saying it broke it forever?
No, it fixed it.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing. I mean, that's
believe
the thing,
me, it fixed it.
These two, say with Sonic and Thunder Force. Thunder Force, I guess, is just more that it hasn't been re-released that often. Whereas Sonic, good God, it's been re-released over and over again. But they're not necessarily ones that are going to be especially enhanced. Like I said, they always M2 always work in some sort of extras and whatnot. But yeah, some of the stuff that they've got lined up, you know, which should be really kind of interesting to see what they do to make it more playable or take advantage of the switches, your form factor, whatever, the vertical orientation for gain ground and all this. I'm looking forward to seeing where it takes us, you know, just how far across kind of Sega history they actually go as well. But I do want to say about Thunder Force as well, one of the things I like about it is that you always have, even at the lowest kind of power-up level, you always have kind of a forward firepower option and a backward firepower option.
And which, you need it.
Yeah, exactly. It's designed around that, you know, in the sense that, you know, the enemies are frequently a threat to come and get you from the back. But you always have something to deal with that. I think you get a problem in some more orthodox shooters sometimes where they kind of want to, you know, kind of inject a bit of variety in the level design by, you know, kind of what, you know, where the enemies come from, or, you know, maybe about how, like I said, sort of enclosed the environments are and stuff like that. But the problem is that a lot of the time, you know, you might have, you know, in a Gradius game, you might have the tail, you know, for firing gun, or you might have double, or you might have absolutely nothing and no speed. But the level is what it is, and sometimes it really doesn't feel like, if you die and start from a checkpoint, it doesn't really feel like your ship in its basic form is fit for purpose at all. You know, they just designed it around the idea that you're going to be on a roll with a bunch of firepower or whatever. But whereas this, yes, you can get more firepower, and there's elements, like I said, that are a bit like Axlay in that you get certain weapons and then you've got a bunch of lives, like I think it tops out at 4, is it? But if you die with a particular weapon equipped, then that weapon goes away. But, you know, you can make a decision of like, okay, I want to hold on to like the souped up backwards firepower for a particular part because I'm going to need it to, you know, get chip away at a particular boss more quickly from that angle. So I'll hold off on using it to make sure I've got it in reserve for later and things like that. You know, just brings in a little more strategy, but at the same time, yeah, to when you are powered up, but at the same time you never feel like, oh well, I haven't got the full firepower, so I'm just shit out, you know. That to me is kind of smart, and like I said, it's the kind of thing that came, I think, more with than in the 90s, and more when certain shooters were, you know, kind of a bit more home focused than the pure arcade sort of era of the 80s.
Right. I'm trying to think. There's another game that did that. I'm blanking on what it is now, where like there was a whole metagame about dumping to a weapon you just didn't care about when you knew you were about to die.
Well, you said Axlay certainly fell into that category. Yeah. There's probably others, you know, so it's, but in this case, the weapons you've got, you know, kind of the two basic ones, the forward and back, like can be kind of powered up, but then you get all these other kind of, you know, like special ones, like, you know, that fire up and down, or that fire in multi-directional and stuff. They're kind of the ones that you can just totally lose outright. Whereas, you know, the core two, the sort of first two, is a case of, you know, you're always going to have some version of them. It's just not necessarily going to be as good as what you can pick up through a power up, but it gives you a decent base level. I mean, again, in Axelay, if you take enough hits that all your guns are deactivated and you're down to your last hit, you're kind of just crawling along. like with so little firepower, you know, that it's a sort of, can be just a sort of extended torturous death. Whereas, like I said, I think it's a nicer baseline here, but it's also a hell of a lot faster and busier than Axelay, you know, because that was quite a slow pace shooter being on the Super Famicom at the time.
Cool. All right. Well, Guillaume, take us home.
Sure. So, probably over a month ago, I talked about the last or the next, depending on who you ask. I think it's the last, Penelope. This game that was not exactly what I thought it would be. It was more of a kind of a puzzle game where you had to execute certain maneuvers in order to win races, more than an actual racing game. And I said that I had a lot of nostalgia or fondness for, you know, the kind of racer that this looked like, you know, with an overhead view, kind of like, you know, Micro Machines on the NES or stuff like that. And then I also talked about that on Twitter, and Neil saw that my Twitter feed and sent me a code for a game which came out. Actually, the order of events was a little bit different. Like I saw this game called, someone brought to my attention this game called Mantis. Where is it?
Mantis Burn Racing.
Mantis Burn Racing.
Yeah!
Which is a weird name. Yeah, so Mantis Burn Racing. And so I look up the trailer on Steam, and I'm just like, oh, that looks cool. I hope it makes it on Switch one day. And then I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should check if it isn't already there. And yeah, it came out earlier this year on Switch. I just never noticed, because I guess I wasn't craving that game, that kind of experience. But it's you know, a racing game, overhead view. It's got online play, which is now locked from me because I refuse to pay that $20 or 30 Canadian bucks.
Anybody with family accounts, hook this man up.
Right, treat yourself, Guillaume. Treat yourself.
You can set all your parental controls on his Switch from this point forward, so go for it.
I might eventually, you know, I might eventually get the online, but right now there's nothing really compelling.
And there's,
me to.
There's a few interesting aspects with that, isn't there? Haven't, like, the Pinball FX sort of situation where, like, currently I think you need to be an online subscriber just to, like, do anything online with that game, but that's, they've said, you know, that's not, you know, how they want it to be, but they're gonna have to do an update to make sure, you know, that it can be accessed outside of the subscription interface.
It takes you to the opposite example of Fortnite, which they just announced a Switch bundle for, which does not require online to play.
When it said about, you know, online play and all being required for online play, except in the case of certain free to play titles, that was kind of like
certain
pouring petrol in the shape of the letters of Fortnite and then lighting it on fire.
Certain free to play games that start with an F and end with Ortnite.
But yeah, so Mantis Burn Racing, not a shooter. So it does have, if you have the online service, you can play crossplay with PC and probably Xbox, I suppose.
Yeah.
So it's got that going for it. But I've heard from other people online that even when it came out initially on Switch, even with a crossplay, it was hard to find online opponents. So anyway, maybe if you know someone else who has the game, you can plan to play with them. But on its own, like, I'm playing it single player, and it's pretty good. Like, it's pretty much exactly what I wanted. It's got this kind of this long campaign where you start with a limited, you know, roster of cars, and as you progress through the you know, various challenges, you unlock new parts, you gain experience points that allow you to upgrade your cars. And it's kind of it's a slow burn so far. Like the going
burn?
Through.
if you will.
Yeah. See, I can do it too.
You sure you can. I don't know. Like, there's not that much, I guess, to say about it, except that it's got kind of a nice look. Like, it doesn't look like much from stills, but if you look at the trailer, it looks pretty neat. Because it's got, it does some interesting things with the perspective, you know, with the overhead view. Like, you'll be going through a city and you're going down a highway ramp, like an exit, and it kind of, the 3D-ness of it comes into play, you know, in a nice way, in a way that you couldn't pull off in a Super Nintendo game, for instance. And also, while you can have the fixed camera angle, like you can select to play like that, to play like a Micro Machines game or a Crazy, what's it called? Crazy Ivan Off-Road Racing?
Yeah,
something like that.
Ivan something, something's off-road
racing. Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly I've been choosing a camera that was always behind my car and overhead, and I think it's called it's tighter. It follows my car more tightly than the default camera. Otherwise, like if you steer left and right, the camera takes its time to catch up with the angle that your car is traveling towards, and that really messed me up, and it made it look like the handling was really, really loose, but really the camera was the issue. But yeah, you just like press the camera button a bunch of times and you find what works for you. The game came out just a few years ago, but it does feel a little bit like it's got PS3, Xbox 360 syndrome, Unreal Engine 3 syndrome of everything is brown or you know, kind of dull colored. So that's a little bit disappointing. But despite that, it's still, you know, they still managed to make a kind of a pleasing looking game. And yeah, like it's a fun little game, and I would you know, recommend it to people who have a similar craving. Although I think that more games since then have come out that maybe fit more directly the bill of like a Micro Machines like racing game. I can't remember exactly. I think it's called like Boxy Cars or something.
Yeah, something like that.
That came out last month. That's supposed to be good. Some people on the staff were really excited about that being on the Switch. So I don't know. Might try that later. But in terms of like a you know, a pretty long single player campaign that you can go back to occasionally. Yeah, Mantis Burn Racing is a solid title.
Cool. All right. Well, that will do it for new business. When we come back, it will be time for, we'll say a selection of listener mail. Stay tuned. It's part two of the show where we handle our emails. You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We actually have some emails in the inbox right now. That's great. I love that we have emails. Thank you for sending them. Keep sending them. Keep sending us your weird and wonderful emails. But first, before we get down to emails, we got a little bit of business to handle. Guillaume, do you want me to kind of intro it, or do you just want to go?
Well, just in short, we are going to be dropping chapters from the AAC version of this show. In fact, we might drop the AAC version of this show. We're going to keep the feed, but we're going to update it with the MP3 version. And the reason we're doing this is because everyone editing this podcast is doing so on a PC. We're using software that doesn't seem to be able to create chapters that gets recognized by a lot of
majority.
The majority of Apple apps, including Apple's own podcast app, but others as well. I would recommend people to get Downcast, which is what I'm using, but then Downcast is not on Android. So,
nope.
Yeah. They're kind of SOL. Android users can't really use the chapters anyway, it seems. So, given that the interest, I think, in chapters was already limited, not everyone needs them, and then the fact that not everyone can even use them if they wanted to, it's not really worth putting the work that we do into them. So we're going to keep putting the kind of the timestamps in the descriptions. And I think that pretty much every podcast player out there is able to, if you, you know, skip ahead, like they act as chapter stops.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep doing that. And so if you want to skip my rambling, you can easily, just as before, but you're not going to see my yellow ponchos.
Can I do it in real time, Guillaume? Like, can I do it right now?
No, you can't.
No, unfortunately, no. No, I'm going to keep rambling. Actually, I'm kind of done, so.
Yeah, so, and just to give some context here, we did an informal survey a couple weeks ago asking, like, hey, what apps support chapters? And we got, like, one. And then we got a bunch of people like, no, they've never worked. And it's like, oh, okay. It used to be that we could do chapters pretty easily, all things considered, mm-hmm. on PC devices. But Apple changed the format and in a very Apple way made it so basically if you want to have compatible chapters, you've got to do it in their product on their OS, on their hardware.
Got to buy a dongle.
So to quote Quocho, fuck them. So we're just going to move on. We're going to, you know, we've had chapters a long time. They're an opportunity to squeeze one more joke into it. But if nobody's seeing the joke, what's the point? We'll still have some images on the Twitter feed. Obviously, we post new episodes. You get to enjoy those. But it won't be the concerted creation of 12 images plus chapters. I know it seems kind of minor, but it actually does add a pretty significant amount of time to the show. To the edit. So we had some conversations about it. It's just not worth trying to solve it. We took a crack at it. We really put some effort in, and we just haven't been able to find a good solution for it. So. Here we are, moving forward into the future. So we will have chapters this week, which if you use the chapters, if you're like the 1% who's able to use the chapters, you've noticed they're here. But next week, we're going to go ahead and drop them.
Yeah, chapters is last-gen technology anyway.
What are you, a Sony reference?
Yeah, that is a PS3 launch reference. There's a hot... topical 12-year-old reference.
Well, to be fair, though, it's also a PS4 reference when they talked about backwards compatibility. Who wants that? Everybody talks about it, but nobody actually wants to play these old games.
Yeah. Who wants to play these PS1, case, PS2, though, and PS3 games?
In that case, it's literally true by definition as well. So,
the best part is like, juxtapose that quote with the sales charts of the NES and SNES Classic, and then the PlayStation, what are they calling it?
What is it? Is it the Classic Mini?
Oh God, if they actually called it that, that's fucking obscene.
I don't know what it's called. You know what was crazy though was that Modern Warfare 2 on Xbox compatibility.
They are calling it the PlayStation Classic.
The PlayStation Classic, yeah. Yeah, what's crazy was MPDs came out, and Modern Warfare 2 was like the 8th best-selling game of the month.
That game's got a rep, man. It's got energy.
It's crazy.
Yep. It's a good game. Yeah. Anyway, emails. We're going to talk about them. That was not a clap me in the future who's editing this. I mean, it was, but it wasn't the clap. Well, fuck it. I'm going to read the first email. Here we go. Let's read an email, everybody. Who like emails? We all like emails.
I'm glad
emails.
RFN at
NintendoWorldReport.com. It's where you send your emails. This is from David in California. Writes, "Hey RFN crew. It's the year 2019. We'll mark two very important anniversaries for Nintendo. The original Game Boy's 30th anniversary and the 20th anniversary of the Super Smash Bros. Series. Which of these anniversaries will likely be celebrated by Nintendo? Which of these anniversaries do you value the most? Thanks, and keep up the quality content." Again, to go back to the beginning of the show, we can make those jokes. We'd rather you didn't. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
Comments are closed.
Review us on iTunes.
I would say the Game Boy's 30th anniversary would be the more important one to me. That's what I would value more.
I think it's the one that's more likely to mark. I mean, the thing about Smash is, you know, it's coming out in December, Ultimate, which, like, encompasses all of Smash history. So it's like, what more can you do? I mean, maybe they could do some skins as, like, free DLC to celebrate the anniversary of the original Smash Brothers when that comes around, of like, oh, he is blocky Donkey Kong from the 64 game or something. But I mean, it's so all encompassing. It's kind of already done once Ultimate
Fighting
comes
Polygon
out.
Team is now a character.
Yeah, maybe so, and all that kind of stuff. But
Master Hand is now a character.
They might put like a sticker on the box of the next Smash that says like 30th anniversary or something, and just like when they celebrate Zelda anniversaries, like instead, I guess like a golden controller is not really a thing, and they're already kind of releasing classic controllers like GameCube controllers
keep coming out. Yeah, Smash is such a kind of introspective kind of series anyway. It's incredible that, you know, it's been going that long, really, to me. It doesn't feel like that, but that's just getting older. But the Game Boy one is certainly the more significant in terms of Nintendo history, and it's also something that's more apt for celebration with respect to some sort of software or hardware initiative.
Game Boy Mini?
Yeah, we talked a lot about some kind of Game Boy Classic or, you know, something. I mean, the NES and SNES minis, you know, have shown that they kind of can have a consistent potential at retail rather than just the sort of the frenzy, you know, that we had with the NES mini at first, where it's like, okay, you know, it's here and it's in short supply and everyone kind of goes nuts and buys it. You know, you wondered when they did actually get to a point where it was being regularly stocked, what kind of legs it would have. But both seem to be, you know, really supplementing Nintendo's hardware sales quite nicely over a period of time. So, you know, it's only going to increase the interest in more such products. I've long thought, as I've said on the show, that Game Boy is very, very well positioned for such treatment, you know, arguably better than stuff like N64. In a lot of ways, and you've got the 30th anniversary angle, which of course we've already kind of alluded to, like with PlayStation. That's their angle, is that it's the 25th anniversary of the original PlayStation. So it just seems to line up to me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm more interested in a Game Boy Classic Mini than I am the NES or Super NES Classic Minis, because I never owned one. So
let me lay it out for you. Let me just put it out here.
This is going to be something.
This is going to be so. James has left. James Jones Esquire, business
Tyler's
magnate.
Tyler's not
here.
Tyler went away. What?
Yeah, exactly. This is James' business here. This is James' big money. So, what's most important for Nintendo is obviously the Game Boy, because during the N64 and the GameCube era, that line kept them afloat economically. Like, that was where their money came from. And I mean, they would talk about it. Like, they'd have their pie charts, because E3 used to be all about bar charts and pie charts.
I remember those days.
They'd have like their bar chart, and it would be like, here's this purple one for the GameCube, and then here's this fucking gray one that shoots through the top of the chart because of scale for the. And they would actually sometimes like play with the scale. So, like, it didn't look so bad, and then you'd actually read the axis and be like, that's some fucking statistical mass murder you're committing here, Nintendo.
They would show the graph bars, but from overhead.
Yeah.
As you can see here.
Or it'd be, like, sales relative to some weird benchmark that's not the same between the two of them.
In short, not everything about the present is worse, kids.
That's right. So, obviously, for the company's history, the Game Boy is the thing. It's the thing that matters to them. But I don't think they're going to pass up on either, and I don't want them to pass up on either. You see, I'm gonna lay out a plan for you both for all of this. All right, it is December, it is November 2019. Smash Bros. Has been out for a year.
The galaxy is at peace.
It's time to sell more fucking bundles. We're going to sell more. There's already been a Smash bundle, you're saying, and you're right, there has been a Smash bundle. but there's not been a 20th anniversary Smash bundle. And there's not been new DLC characters for Smash Ultimate until now. With Amiibo, because they all get fucking Amiibo, because Nintendo is nothing if not persistent. So, what's your, I've already mentioned them. How much would you pay to play as Master Hand? I bet people would pay a lot. I bet they'd pay good money. $5, $6, $7 to play as Master Hand? I'm thinking 3 or 4 DLC characters that are for the series. They advertise them as 20th anniversary DLC.
I would give my Master Hand to play as Master Hand.
I don't need to hear about how you use your Master Hand, John.
What about his crazy hand, though? That's the one you really got to worry about.
an idle Master Hand makes the devil's work. Yes. All that. That's Nintendo's. That's their push. They have a direct. Sakurai comes out there. We thought he was gone. He's like, I done. This is Smash Ultimate. No. 4 more DLC characters, all related to the anniversary. And they'll come with the bundle, the new Smash bundle with the Switch. It doesn't just have a stupid gray line on it, because that's what the fucking one that has now.
Yeah, the dock art is fine. The Joy-Con art.
Like, you can tell us. I was like, fuck, what do we do with the Joy-Con? Gray line. Done. So that's how they'll handle Smash. They'll make some cash on it. It'll be fine. I like the idea of DLC costumes for all the original Smash characters to be blocky.
Yeah. I mean, they did it. They basically did that with Odyssey. You know, the blocky costume and all that. I could see
really
that
well received.
Something kind of minor like that, but I don't know. I don't know whether it would be something that I'd necessarily expect people to pay for. More like a kind of fun free update or something, along with some other kind of...
I mean, they made us pay for Mii costumes, to be fair.
They didn't make me pay for them. I didn't get it.
Well, yeah. I bought Heihachi. That was it. All right, so... But also with that, the stages that were the N64 stages, like, there's one in their game that just looks like an N64 stage. I can't remember which one it is. Just do that. Here they are. Here are the N64 stages again. You're good to go.
And they're already in there, though, virtually all of them. I mean, apart from some of the ones that are, like, really kind of verging on redundant with their replacements in Melee,
But didn't some of them get touched up?
But I think you're going to see so many. I mean, yeah, there's some, I think, isn't the Super Mario Brothers sort of, classic sort of level, like, more authentic now, because it wasn't actually accurate to the color scheme of Super Mario Brothers originally. So, like,
I'm thinking the ones that aren't N64 authentic, here they are, bang, just like they looked before. Maybe it's just a setting on the other ones, but just throw it out there. This isn't a big lift for them. This is a relatively minor stuff. They get a chance to remarket Smash, because Smash is gonna be one of those long sellers, and they get to make a new bundle, because, I mean, they've got 4 bundles this holiday season or something like that. So, like, obviously they don't mind having a bunch of bundles out there for the holiday. I think Smash could totally support another bundle a year down the road when there's a different Pokemon game coming out. Great. Game Boy. This is where they put the tire down on the road and start driving. I've been not on board with the Game Boy Classic Mini thing. I think it's going to be a harder sell. Because it's the idea of something you'd carry around with you versus something that, you know, you already have with you, like your phone, or something you hook up to your TV and it's stationary, it looks cool. But given the amount of money these things have made for them, now I'm kind of there. I'm like, okay, maybe they will do it. Fine. They make their Game Boy Mini, they put stuff on it to sell it, whatever. They probably make a couple flavors of it because there's so many Game Boy games. Done. Sell it, you're good to go. But Game Boy games in the Switch Online service 2019...
Yeah, that's another possibility I've considered, and I think it's something I'd like to see, because, you know, we did get the Virtual Console on 3DS that brought back a lot of Game Boy games and stuff like that, but I'd hate for that to be kind of the end of it, you know, in terms of bringing some of those games back. You've got some really kind of notable games in Nintendo history. You've got some games that hold up well today. You know, I just don't see why we shouldn't have a similar kind of representation for that as we do for the console stuff.
Absolutely. I'm not done yet. Game Boy themed Switch stuff. Switch itself? Maybe not. Case? Definitely. But maybe, really, we get it to Switch coloring and we do get one there. Special editions. It may be time. Depends if they can cut the price on Switch yet or not. If they can, the special edition dam is about to break and we are going to get flooded. Because Nintendo fucking does this shit with their handhelds. So get ready, it's coming. And if the 3DS is, for whatever reason, still going in 2019, which all indications are that it is, you may even get your Game Boy-themed 3DS, new 3DS, new 2DS, excuse me.
2DS XL.
Your new 2DS XL Game Boy-themed. I think they go all out. I think it's just a deluge, and we are buried in chintzy marketing opportunities to remind us that Nintendo's been around a long time. Business.
I think that would be pretty underwhelming, though. It would just be a reminder that the Virtual Console has abandoned Game Boy titles. Like, it would just... I don't think it would be particularly satisfying. And
oh, I didn't say it'd be satisfying.
but also, I don't know. I don't think that the kind of people who would buy a 3DS, a Game Boy-themed 3DS, would be buying a 3DS in 2019. You know, like the draw, I don't think that the Game Boy has that kind of fan that would buy hardware just because of the, you know, a skin.
The 3DS has the kind of fan that would buy 3DSs because they have custom skin or they have unique skins.
I never bought that 3DS XL, all right?
What fucking 3DS XL are you talking about?
The Super NES one.
Oh, you did or you didn't?
No, I didn't. I did not. All right.
If we ransack your house, am I going to find it?
No, you're not. I thought better of it, and I said, no, not this time. No, John, not this time.
Oh, God. Did he just, like, regress into, like, an 8-year-old? What's going on? All right. Do anybody else have any other thoughts?
I don't know. I'm sure we're going to hear something about it. And did I forget. I don't keep track of these things. The Nintendo patent... some sort of a Game Boy Classic? Like, have people seen that going around, or?
So they, if they did, they just trademarked it, which...
Right,
like,
which makes sense. They're just covering,
yeah,
you know,
trademark everything.
Right. So it doesn't mean necessarily that they're working on something.
I think there's been more kind of tangible rumblings on that front for an N64 Mini. But, in some ways, Game Boy's more apt for it because of the mind share that it had, because of the breadth of games that it had, the long lifespan that it had. But it would be fundamentally probably a bit of a different type of device, because you've got to have something with a built-in screen, presumably. I mean, you might be able to hook it up to the TV as well, but, you know, whereas N64 Mini is easier in terms of just extending the kind of line that you've already got. Although it's got complications, like, what do you do about four controllers and this sort of thing? But yeah, it definitely seems like that line is going to get extended, possibly along multiple fronts. I'd like to see them make it work for Game Boy more than N64 myself. But that's because I've just played so much, you know, to go back to John's point, I just played so much more of the N64's, you know, prominent games to death already. That, you know, it's just from a selfish point of view, but also because Game Boy is more important in Nintendo history, in video game history. It's a bigger landmark.
Yeah, I my wish list, if they do make a Game Boy Classic Mini, is and I don't think I've heard this idea thrown around. Integrate the Game Boy camera. You know, like every device, every portable device has a camera on it now, but have it on the Game Boy Classic with the, maybe even, like, you know, give people the possibility to take actually good pictures, but definitely put a filter in there.
Yeah, so it shrinks down to that resolution,
yeah,
and dot matrix.
Yeah,
look.
Yeah, and see, put the software also in there.
I think good pictures would ruin the Game Boy camera experience.
I know, well, you gotta have that real shit camera.
Yeah.
And, I don't think you could recreate that, because it was such a like, oh my god, this is a camera without film. Holy shit.
Yeah, and one game that has to be on there that hasn't been put on the Virtual Console, but it's not. I've never played it. I don't think it's that great of a game, but they would have an opportunity to put Kirby's Tilt and Tumble on there, and like any game like that that they own the rights to and that they could put in that haven't been seen in a long time. They should take that opportunity to put in there.
Yeah, the way they did with Star Fox 2, you know, I mean, yeah. It seems like that's not out of the question that they might, you know, to help to sort of put a, you know, create a bit of extra buzz in certain circles, you know, out there for that kind of product if it is something that's, you know, not what we saw on the Virtual Console for Game Boy on 3DS. Although even that, I mean, obviously they've sort of tilt and tumbled's one thing, but, you know, there was a lot of, you know, pretty easy sort of cuts that they didn't make, especially like along third party kind of outside. You know, we got Castlevania, mm-hmm. The Adventure, which is regarded as being terrible, but we didn't get its sequel, which is regarded as being much better. You know, so if they were kind of going to do this, and I think they should, you know, do the same thing as they've done with NES, Super NES minis, and you know, get some of those sort of major third parties involved for, you know, sort of the some of the titles that are somewhat synonymous with the platform, that there's even some things there that weren't on Virtual Console before.
Yeah, I think there's lots of room to make stuff here. It's just a question of like, where do they feel like, okay, what's enough to get our cash and be out? And there's some really neat Game Boy games that I think you could really get in there. I would much prefer to see a Game Boy, if you're going to do a Game Boy product, that it be deep cuts. Like, really deep. Like, fuck, I want Kid Dracula. Like, if you're going to put out
that's
a Game
another
Boy,
one, that's another one I would have thought he would have said, because, again, you know, you had some Konami stuff on there, so why not? You know, we're getting the Kid Dracula reference in Smash Brothers now, so let's do
this. And there is an NES version of that game, but it never got an English translation.
Yeah,
so
that's
right. If you're going to do it, it's got to be that one. And, like, it should be almost exclusively deep cuts. Like, you can throw in, you know, maybe Mario 2 or something. But
you got,
like,
and you got to, you cannot do it without Tetris. They've got to get
that. Should be hard.
That was on the Virtual Console for a time, and then it was delisted. But if you're gonna do this product, you got to have that version of Tetris on it, and you got to jump through whatever licensing hoops to make it happen.
Yeah, but it's got to be. I feel like it's got to be like Game Boy exclusive games. And of course, a lot of Game Boy games were licensed games, but it needs to be the weird and unique stuff. Like, is Blaster Master Boy available? Can we get the license for that? It's good. Let's throw some weird stuff out there. I'm ready. Give me Bubsy 2 for Game Boy. Put it on there. Let's make it happen. All right, I think we're ready to move on. John, I would like you to read Tara's email.
Tara writes, Spider-Man on PS4 is performing well, so what mainstream comics hero deserves a AAA title next, and why is it a sequel to Bonzai Barber starring Groot?
Oh, the world doesn't need a Bonzai Barber sequel.
No, it really doesn't.
You can play it 5 minutes a day, and then you're done. All right, so anybody got an immediate take here?
I would say Venom.
Venom?
On the Spider-Man theme.
Wasn't there...
There's a skin. What? There's a skin in that Spider-Man game for Venom.
And there have been Venom games.
But there was last generation a game that seemed to be kind of Venom-ish. I can't remember what it was called. It was published by EA, I think. It was regularly kind of compared to Infamous. God damn it.
Oh, there were two of them. The Darkness?
No, sorry. It will come back to me, maybe. But you had basically, like, the character had to consume people to keep going. And it was kind of, you know, kind of like stupidly edgy. I've never played it. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Dark Sector? I mean, I feel like you're describing The Darkness, but that's actually a 2K game.
Right, and it's also first person, isn't it?
It is a first person
game. I'm thinking of an open world game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know then. Yeah, open world games. So to me, I was actually thinking about this before the email came in, relatively recently. What would actually make a good Supes game?
He really hasn't been in a good one, right? I mean, I'm really struggling. I'm sure there's been loads that I'm struggling to think of.
I saw Mike Drucker, who used to work for Nintendo, who's, you know, one of the people responsible for the dialogue in Kid Icarus Uprising, tweeted that like a pretty good idea. Yeah, well, anyway, I like him. He tweeted a pretty good idea about Superman, since he's so invincible. Maybe like give the life bar to the city, and every time that you fail to protect the city, you know, like that gets you closer to a game over.
So he didn't invent that, because there actually is a Superman game that is exactly that.
Oh,
the Superman game on on the GameCube, I think. That was the whole mechanic, was the city was in peril and it had a life bar. So what I would say, so here's the thing. Let me start with this. Superman sucks. Superman the character sucks. And here's the reason. He's too powerful. His powers are inconsistent. That whatever writer who has him can just give him a power and it's fine. What's that? He needs to know what's going on. Oh, he can read through paper. Why? He has X-ray vision. Well, shouldn't he see through the paper? No, fuck you. He can read through it. Doesn't work on ink. There's a bomb that goes off. Oh, he has ice breath. He doesn't have a lane. And most superheroes have a lane, and they stay in their lane, and that lane lets you then build challenges around them and forces them to adapt. Superman can just do whatever the fuck he wants. And that's why he's also a terrible video game character, because he can just do whatever the fuck he wants. So any challenge you're put in instantly feels superficial, because you can go like, well, Superman has X-ray vision. He can just see through the disguise. This is pointless. Like, the idea of, it was one of the animated movies where, like, they did a Batman-Superman crossover, and Superman had to deal with the Joker, and it's like, well, he just punched him in the face. He can fly faster than a fucking bullet. He just punched him in the face. Batman's villains don't stand a chance against Superman, because he can fly faster than a bullet.
Yeah, but that was like the Paul Dini version of Superman, where, you know, like they nerfed his powers for that reason in that show, right?
Yeah, but he still flies faster than an airplane, which means he's flying faster than fucking Joker.
In various movies and TV shows and in those cartoons, they show him straining to catch up with the plane, so...
Yeah, but the Joker's still not getting away on foot. He's too powerful to be a good character.
Just go the NES Superman route, where you just have like this very limited gauge for each power, and then you run out of them, and then you just return your rental, and you're wow, that was shit.
Yeah. So here's how you make a good Superman game. He has one weakness, and it's not kryptonite, because that fucking thing is, he just kicks it away. Oh, I'm better now. Ha! Fuck you.
Is it Richard Pryor?
Well, that's the secondary weakness. His one weakness is that he has to, for whatever stupid reason, for whatever contrite Golden Age comic book reason, he has to have a secret identity. I don't know why. He's got super strength. He could be a billionaire if he wants to and just fucking do it.
They explain in every new version of this, like, they explain why he needs he wants the contact with human people, you know, like he, it's and a, it's to protect them. It's don't you know reason. Anything?
It's a dumb reason.
Also, so, if you shift like your hair, like, you know, hairstyle a little bit and put on
fake glasses.
You can fool any kind of face detection program.
That's how image detection works. But the thing about it that's the dumbest is that, like, he's superpowered. Shouldn't he just be like breaking doors and shit all the time? So here's a Superman game for you. Superman game for the modern era. Most of the game is about getting around and not being detected. Not giving up the fact that you are Superman. You have all the powers and you can use them, but you don't know where to go. Superman doesn't have like a radio signal going like, hey, Supes, we need you over. He doesn't have like the fucking bat light and all that stuff. He has to get around. And you could apply this to Batman as well, where you actually live the life of the other alter ego. And then actually have to transition without being seen. You have to try to manage that arrangement. And then you can actually do some stuff with it, because he has a weakness. His weakness is, I have been seen as Clark Kent. I am done. Imagine him trying to hide his identity now. I mean, you face recognition, security cameras fucking everywhere.
Social media,
Social media. Yeah. Everybody's got a camera.
I've never seen Clark Kent and Superman tweet at the same time.
It's true.
this world's awful.
But, like, imagine if the game, it's not like, oh, you've been spotted, you fail. Like, what if you could just go, like, no, I'm going to lean into it. Fuck it, I don't care. I'm going to let everybody know who I am.
The thing
I'm
is,
just going to live,
like, what if he gets
I'm just going to live
as,
my life.
What if he gets drunk as Clark Kent and starts, like, tweeting on it, like, starts, like...
He has absolutely gotten drunk as Clark Kent before and punched a bartender to death.
And,
it's happened.
And he's going
to
put stuff on Instagram. You know what's going to happen.
Smallville was a place until Clark Kent got his first six-pack of Deschutes, and then it was over.
Actually, I think that Kryptonians process alcohol faster. They don't really get drunk.
See, exactly! That probably happened in a comic, which is why he's so fucking terrible.
Yeah, I think that you're overthinking this. Like, just as you said, they can give him the weakness. Anyone who's writing him can give him the weaknesses that they want. So just do a Hulk Ultimate Destruction kind of thing where, you know, enough missiles can bring you down. And just like Hulk Ultimate Destruction, just you know, allow him to pick up any kind of car or anything and throw them at the enemies, and you know, have fun.
But
like,
see,
the whole stealth thing sounds boring.
But the thing is, like, I would much rather play that as the Hulk then, because Superman's not about wanting destruction.
I'm not
all about, I need to protect the, like, no, he's so fucking square. The Hulk will just blow shit up. That's great. That's great. But if you're going to make a Superman game, it's got to be about the part of him that never gets covered.
What if he's on an evil planet? Then he can destroy whatever
he wants.
No,
because he's such a square, he'd be like, well, I still can't hurt the civilians. This is their culture. I could only defend myself.
He's
boring.
You just give him that speech at the end in the cutscene, you know. Like the
All
ending.
Of this genocide I carried out was for the common good.
Yes.
No, he's not going to do that. Put Hulk on an evil planet. Just watch him tear the shit up. I like the idea, though, that, like, it's not just a stealth thing. It's about, like, hey, how much do you really want to let out this is Superman? Because, like, maybe you could just let him go fucking nuts and just be like, yeah, I am who I am. Let it influence the story accordingly. As, like, everybody knows Clark Kent Superman. He punched some bank robber in the face while he was still wearing a suit. He didn't care. Put him right through the bank vault. Killed that guy. It was terrible. Children saw it. It was a nightmare. But, like, I don't want mullet 90s edgy Superman. That's not what I'm asking for. Because that was a mistake.
Give him a gun.
Yeah! Give Superman a gun that he fires and then races his own bullets.
Yeah, he can't shoot anybody directly. He can only shoot them if he bounces them off his own chest.
Yes.
So it's just, it's Superman Bank Shot, the video game.
I like the idea, though, that, like, once you decide to make the jump, and now you are Superman in a world with no phone booths, that then you're basically like Jehuti in Zone of the Enders 2, where you're just way too powerful. Because in that game, like, you had the ability to engage this mode that just made you so powerful nothing could stand in your way. And because you had to actively flip that switch and say, no, this is what I want now, it was really fun. So otherwise, like, let him kind of work around the edges. Let him do the journalism thing. Let him do investigations of crimes on his own before he goes all Clark, all Superman, and then just beats the shit out of everybody. Let him figure it out and then go ape shit on the world. Don't let him just fly into thing and fly through some fucking rings and then, like, see bank robbers. Superman versus bank robbers is dumb. Like, there are whole comics about that. Why? What are they going to do? Oh, goddamn.
So, for the record, the Venom-like open-world game that I talked about, Prototype.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just read about that.
Yeah, it just, you know, he's got kind of the shape-shifting, you know, like he can make claws out of his hands, and he's very, very, you know, black, and you know... Yeah,
he looks like he's got
people, just kills everyone.
He's just covered in goo.
Very edgy, yeah. So you could follow that model, I suppose.
All right, John, what is your superhero game, and why is it Big Wheel from Spider-Man? Go. Which, if you don't know what Big Wheel is, just go Google it. It's amazing.
I mean, I said Venom. Venom would be my pick.
That's true. You did. Yeah. My mistake. Yep. I apologize. Yep. I got.
What more do you want
in...
from me, James? Come on.
I want you to write me a big wheels treatment. He's just a dude in a big wheel. All right, who else has got one?
I guess the most surprising thing from rather than like what I would want, but just the expectations is that there hasn't been more capitalization on specifically Iron Man, you know, because he really became like the flag bearer for the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe and all that, and you know, I think he has got a more suitable kind of set of characteristics and powers and stuff for a video game than some like Superman. You know, I'm amazed that nobody, you think of the old days, license games were so prevalent and all that, you know, and then you get to this point where comic book movies are omnipresent and dominating the box office, and Iron Man's the biggest earner of them all, and you know, where's something that sort of captures all the sort of aspects of his character in a video game form, rather than just, you know, all the kind of general like Avengers, you know, Legos, high end type stuff. I mean, you can't help but think of Metroid Prime in terms of some of the, you know, you could have the kind of in the visor stuff, then you could have some third person elements involving, you know, his flight capabilities or some of the other stuff. It seems kind of obvious, but I guess, you know, the landscape for license things just totally changed over the past 10 years and, you know, since the MCU's been going, and I guess it just hasn't lined up yet.
So in 2008, actually, Sega had the license for the MCU games, and they made an Iron Man game, and it was awful.
Yeah, I played the demo for the 3DS version. Yeah,
there was a Thor game by Way Forward, right? I remember on the Nintendo Portable side.
So Hulk had a game, The Incredible Hulk. It was also bad. There was an Iron Man 2 game, there was a Thor God of Thunder game, and there was a Captain America Super Soldier game. Sega had the rights for that whole thing. So the Iron Man one was like the GameCube, PS2, Xbox, 360, PS3, Wii. Like, it was on all that stuff. It was 2008. Iron Man 2 also had a game made by our favorites, High Voltage Software. For Wii PSP, and then Sega San Francisco, I think, made it for the Xbox and the PS3. It also was bad. I don't think it was as bad as Iron Man for the first game. I think it was still like a 6. And then they actually Game Loft, I think, made a mobile game for Iron Man 3, but that was it. After that first round of games and then Iron Man 2, it stopped. So there was a Hulk game on PS3, 360. I think it may have been on everything. That was like Ultimate Destruction. But I don't think it was as good. That was also 08. And then the Captain America game, I think, was pretty bad.
Yeah, it just doesn't... this is the thing you can forget, you know, that, like I said, 10 years ago, I guess, you know, we still were in that kind of phase of just churning out some tie-in stuff that pretty kind of low rent. I mean, I think in terms of Tara talking about Spider-Man, I'm thinking of, you know, really kind of big budget kind of adaptation. Obviously, you know, Sony are very invested in Spider-Man and they're very invested in PlayStation and all that. So, I mean, I know how, you know, getting a budget that big and all the push they've been giving that game down the years, you know, has come to pass. And I guess, yeah, that's the thing. It just isn't necessarily going to happen for other, you know, superheroes or whatever. But, you know, something at least more kind of ambitious than the because that's very much what you were looking at in those days, is the tie-in product. It's so kind of, you know, disposable and so just like of the moment, and obviously we got a lot less of that as time's gone on, because I guess, you know, it just this feeling that you know, it's probably more been left to like the mobile space, or, you know, not consoles, and, you know, maybe, you know, the budgets for doing something respectable have got to a point where it's like, look, you know, it's not worth spending that amount of money on it, and if we don't, maybe it's just more tarnishing the brand than it is helping it. So it seems like it's difficult to reach a kind of acceptable medium here, but it just strikes me as a character that's got a lot of video game potential that hasn't been fully tapped. But I imagine there's loads that you could say the same about, really.
Yeah, I mean, any character who has like a really specific set of skills.
Liam Neeson from Taken.
Yeah, why isn't there a Taken? I mean, first off, Liam Neeson Taken is basically a superhero.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that is. Well, I mean, to be fair, his powers are considerably more than some superheroes, if you ask me.
That's true. Would you not play a Taken video game? I sure as shit would. Like how many Russians in France do we need to just punch the
shit out of? I just basically wanted to be like Contra, though. Yeah, but it's just all, instead of like aliens or whatever, it's mostly just Eastern European people.
I was thinking it would be like Deus Ex Human Revolution, but there's no sci-fi. It's just Liam Neeson just beating up Eastern European people and then just growling at them. But any superhero who's got like a fixed power set, so it's not like all over the place, so you can really build a mechanic around them.
I mean, Batman's been in some terrible games.
We all know there's some
really, really terrible ones. But you look at the Arkham games, and you know, you could see there that, you know, how sort of you can build a really cool game around his sort of power set. And like Iron Man is kind of similar in terms of the gadget elements, but obviously it's more fanciful. But you know, the rich guy thing, like, all that kind of stuff. You know, I feel like you could build a similar, you know, similarly sort of satisfying kind of a game around Iron Man, but maybe more in a kind of whereas, you know, I think especially the original Arkham Asylum had quite a lot of Metroid about it. You know, with Iron Man, you could probably go more Metroid Prime, you know, sort of mix in the first person stuff.
So kind of going after that, though, I haven't played it, but apparently the Batman Telltale games spend most of them as Bruce Wayne. Trying to use his considerable assets to array allies and investigate the crimes without giving away that he is Batman. Because, of course, the Telltale mechanics aren't conducive to action-y stuff. But apparently it was well received, because like you could write this, the fact that he is a human, he is mortal, he's not Thor, he doesn't run in, doesn't like show up with a hammer and blast out of sky, but he can't just lean into all of his skills either, because sometimes he's out as Bruce Wayne and that's it. He's gotta survive a situation as Bruce Wayne. I like that. I like that they, you know, they really looked at that different perspective of who the character is and built around that. What superhero could you not make a good game around besides Aquaman? Like, Aquaman would be terrible because he doesn't really, like, what is his power? He can swim super good and he talks to fish. Like, that's it. That's his powers. And it's like, well, that sounds awful. I feel like I would almost rather it be like a B or a C tier superhero who is just kind of existing in this world where, like, imagine if you took like a really back catalog Marvel universe superhero and then just shunted them into a video game set in the MCU where they're just kind of away from all the shit that's happening and they're going after bank robbers and stuff like that.
Thing or something like that.
Hmm. Well, the Thing's got, like, the Thing's still pretty strong, but like.
Yeah,
like, well, the comic, I don't read a lot of comic books, but I've started reading Miss Marvel and Squirrel Girl, and those seem to be kind of well suited for that kind of, you know, just like the Spider-Man game, an action game set in the big city, and you're beating up thugs.
Right, you're not pretty much super, it. You're not super powerful. If you had to go help the Avengers take down aliens, you're pretty much boned. You're gonna get
She's
wiped
got
out.
The relative strength and agility of a squirrel.
You're gonna get wiped out in minutes. Like,
except that she's unbeatable. She's actually the only one who's taken down what's his name, Thanos? No, I'm thinking of the wrong guy, Galactus.
Oh,
yeah, the planet devourer.
Yeah. Yeah,
but well, you know, it's always kind of a contrived kind of thing where probably wouldn't you know, work as well in a video game where
it's a comedy.
You know, you press Y to punch. But it could be fun. Like the I think what you would really need would be the same writers writing the dialogue, because that's kind of what the whole comic rests on, you know, kind of goofy situations where, you know, oh, she's fighting Ratatosk, like the kind of a god from Norse mythology, and she has to go enlist the help of Thor to, you know, to take down this mythical squirrel. And, you know, there's a lot of jokey stuff, and so you would have to put that in the game somehow.
Yeah, I like the idea of you have this, like, C-tier Marvel character who's not that strong, who needs help to solve actual problems, and so, like, they have to go bother these characters in the middle of, like, the MCU events.
Right.
It's like they have to show up at Doctor Strange's house after he's finished dealing with whatever temporal, just, hey, so we have this, and then this incredibly minor thing they need his help with, and they're just like, no, I'm... Get the fuck out of my house.
Well, one of the very first issues that I've read, she breaks into Tony Stark's, you know, building and steals one of his suits. So, you know, like, you could have fun missions like that. But other than that, like, I'm not picky. Like, as I said, like, I mentioned Hulk Ultimate Destruction. I would love a proper sequel to that, because that was a really, really fun game. And also, you could... I wouldn't mind if, you know, like, you could play a Superman in that same kind of, you know, destroy everything kind of open world game, and I would be happy with that too.
Let it be the. I think the idea of taking the Hulk Ultimate Destruction and then sort of putting it with the sort of the comedy element that Thor Ragnarok has a lot of comedy in it,
sure.
Especially around the Hulk character. Like, just put that sort of tone on Hulk Ultimate Destruction, which was not a super serious game.
Nah.
But just lean all the way into it. Just like, Hulk somehow found himself inside a demolition derby and doesn't know what's going on. Everyone in these cars is fucked. And then he's just destroying everything. Like, just go full rampage on it. Like, he can just do whatever he wants. Blow up everything, break anything. Nobody cares. It's just funny, fun times.
I've got it. I've got it. Blast Core, but you're the Hulk instead of the vehicles.
Done. Perfect.
There's a nuke on a truck going in a straight line, and only the Hulk can clear the way.
Now, How come the Hulk can only destroy these buildings by running backwards into them? That doesn't make sense. What's going on here?
I like the idea that just the Hulk, it doesn't even know why he's doing this stuff. Like, each mission just starts out, and Tony's like, look, go over there, and just, I don't care what you break on the way there, just go there. That guy said something bad about you. And then he just leaves. And then it's like, all right, that guy said something bad about me. I'm going to blow everything up. I'm gonna wreck everything. And he just does it. Because that's pretty much what that character needs to be.
Or you could have She-Hulk Ace Attorney.
This is an alarming thought that you have now put in my head. I kind of like the idea of a tongue-in-cheek Ghost Rider game, though.
Oh. Like, just...
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, let's not think about Nick Cage. And I was thinking about, because he was nearly Batman in the 90s.
He was nearly Superman.
Nearly Superman in the 90s, because Burton was going to move on from Batman to Superman.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just let's not.
See, I like the idea of this, either the superhero in a silly setting or the super serious superhero in a silly setting. Like, the Punisher playing himself completely straight, just like he does always, but set with the tone of Thor Ragnarok. So everything around him is kind of weird and silly, but he super isn't. But that's not really a game. I think
we're back to Taken again, aren't we?
Shit, you're right. All right, well, I think that might need to do it. If we've landed on Taken twice by accident, that's a red flag. It's time to wrap it up.
If you landed twice on Taken, do not pass go. Do not collect 200 bucks.
Do punch a Slovak in the face. All right, well, that's going to do it for email this week. You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We have a particular set of skills that involves answering them very slowly. Thank you for sending your emails. And if you send them, we may use them on the show. Greg, what is our music for ending the show this week?
Well, first of all, I've got to say congratulations to the Browns. They just won a game as we were recording this. Just to put it in context for people who don't appreciate this, Cleveland Browns NFL team not won a game since before the Switchmas reveal event. It was December 2016 for their last win versus January 2017 where the Switch was actually unveiled. So think of the crazy Switch journey we've been on between winning individual games.
For reference, though, they almost won one last week and then got a tie in the most outrageous way possible.
I know. It's just must have been absolutely agonized. If there's one fan base I respect, it's Browns fans.
Yeah.
They have had everything done to them over the years, including having the team ripped away for a number of years. So I'm always hoping for better things for them, and they certainly deserve it. And they have the best mascot in the NFL, Swagger, the actual dog. Rather than just a guy in a suit, which they have too, but you know, there should be more live mascots. It's a college thing mostly, but I would like to see more dogs in the NFL. That's all I want.
More dogs. There's some like metaphor there that we could go into, but we're not gonna. Greg, music wise,
I had a request in from Caesar when he was sending us his letter about box art for the kind of intro theme for the Guardian Legend, which is an interesting NES game kind of originally developed by Compile. Most famous for vertical shooters of various sorts, and this game is kind of one of those something that started to happen on NES, Famicom, where you would sort of mash genres together, and this one you have sort of like a vertical shooting component but mixed in with a kind of action adventure Zelda kind of game, you know, exploring an overworld and whatnot. So it's something I've always thought sounded cool. It's kind of been lost to time in terms of getting re-released, because I think it had a bunch of different, like IREM published it in Japan, I think Broderbund published it in the West or something. You know, it's got a kind of complicated kind of history for getting re-released, so I don't know how much hope we would ever have to see it again in that kind of form, but always heard cool things about it, and also always appropriate because we've got Velocity 2X just came out on Switch, which is sort of similar. It has vertical shooting, which was from the first Velocity that I played on PSP, but then it has side-scrolling kind of sections with that. So that's a sort of the similar sort of genre mashup that's just arrived on Switch as well. But Guardian Legend, I've not heard any of the music before I took Caesar's request, but it sounds pretty cool to me. And I don't think I've got any plans to play it soon, but it would certainly be something I'd like to get to one day if it isn't going to come out any other way.
Awesome. Well, that will do it for us this week. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Later.
Bye-bye.